What is God within you? Polina woke up in the middle of the night from a disturbing dream. She stared at the ceiling for a long time, unable to grasp the moment of her own awakening. There, in the world of forgotten dreams, the girl observed from the sidelines a sad funeral ceremony held in honor of the death of her physical body. At the same time, she felt joy and did not feel any worry until she began to distinguish horrible creatures among the relatives and friends present. They writhed around her loved ones, emitting gurgling, frightening sounds and sinking their fangs into the bodies of those around them. But the others seemed not to notice them at all. Engulfed in grief and deep sorrow, they did not see either the horrible creatures or Polina herself. Frightened by these creatures, the girl imagined the face of the master and began to look around, searching for his blessed image that brought light into any, even the darkest, darkness. With this feeling of anxious pursuit, Polina woke up. Apparently, the world of her own imagination and the impressions received during the day created a dream that burdened the emotional center too much. Recollecting the details of the dream, suddenly realized that it exactly copied a scene from the recently watched cartoon Life After Life. However, her imagination made her the main character. Continuing to stare at the ceiling, the girl reflected on the boundlessness of the subtle level and how good it was that she remembered the master in her dream. In her memory, the girl was transported to a wonderful day when the keeper of knowledge delivered a darshan. Chatting with the disciples, he explained to them where and how the flight of Atman occurs during sleep.
The master was telling,
the girl recalled,
that the connection of Atman with the physical body remains during sleep, and it can quickly return from the subtle level and the world of dreams, where it flies, saturating itself with emotions.
The entire following day, Polina pondered the previous night and the phenomenon of death itself. The master taught her not to fear it and to perceive physical death as the beginning of a new life for her Atman. However, many more questions of the disciple required the precious attention of the great sage. The solemn and exciting day of Darshan arrived. The master decided to conduct this important stage of teaching in a picturesque natural corner where the harmony of the energies of water, earth, and air dwelled in perfect balance, created by the divine hand. This place was located in a pine grove, away from the city noise. Here, between the trunks of tall, slender trees, rays of bright sunlight seeped through, warming the green canvas. Surrounded by pines and birches, a pond the size of a small lake radiated mystery and unfathomable power. Its clear water looked like a mirror reflecting the infinite sky. Not far from the pond stood a small cobblestone house with a spacious gazebo. The walls inside it were decorated with carved wooden figures depicting spirits, symbolizing various powers of nature. Around the house, one could notice some tracks leading in different directions through the forest thickets and clearings. They were marked with decorated animal figurines, creating a sense of play and adventure. These tracks led to other places of power in the forest, where disciples could meditate in seclusion, perform rituals, or delve into sacred knowledge from holy books, enjoying the beauty of the surrounding nature, inspired by its purity and harmony. Inside the room, comfortable mats were laid out on the wooden floor for the disciples to sit on. A light, soothing aroma of grapefruit and bergamot spread from thin incense sticks placed in special niches. Finding herself among the sisters, Polina shared the details of her dream with them. This caused an emotional wave of discussions. Along the way, the disciples eagerly savored the impressions of the animated masterpiece about life after death. In the flow of such active, dynamic energy, the master found them. He silently entered the gazebo, enjoying the interweaving of melodic female voices. Noticing the keeper, the girls excitedly greeted him, soaking up the benevolent vibrations emanating from the radiant, bright image. Treading softly on the cobblestone floor, the folds of his long black robe rustling, he proceeded to his place. After the joint prayer, the disciples gained the necessary attitude to perceive the knowledge. Several people immediately raised their hands to find out the answers to all the questions that arose during their reasoning. The sage opened his palm and pointed to Sansa, a green-eyed girl with bright blush on her cheeks. Her blonde hair was gathered under a wide green headband, which aesthetically complemented her bright image and added a bright, realistic touch to it.
"Dear Master,"
she began inspiringly,
"we sisters started discussing the topic of life and death and came to one interesting question together. If death is not the end, then what is the end? Or is everything infinite? Are there energies or substances in our body that are finite by nature?"
The Keeper of Knowledge lovingly surveyed his disciples and with a satisfied expression began to explain the truth.
"Yes, we can say that with the arrival of biological death, there comes an end for the physical body. But the personality continues to live. After death, the personality is preserved. It lives on. Of course, the conditions for its life will now be completely different."
The sage paused, and in the resounding silence, everyone heard the buzzing of a bee that flew in through the window of the gazebo. Smiling, the master decided that the honey-making visitor would be a successful and understandable example for the disciples. He spoke,
"It's just like a bee. At first, it lives in the hive. There are many bees in this hive. It's dark and cramped there. Bees crawl over each other, huddling in this little house. Then the bee grows and turns into a mature individual ready to fly out of the hive. It has an important mission. It has acquired the knowledge and experience accumulated by other bees and flies towards the flowers to collect the coveted sweet nectar. For the bee, this is already a completely different world. There is no more crowding and darkness. Now life opens up to it, full of light, sunshine, fresh air, and beautiful flowery meadows. And a completely different world opens up to it. The bees sat in confinement, and suddenly it flies, the sun, flowers all around, nectar, and so on."
"So, Master, is it the same for humans? After death, a completely different life opens up, full of light and divine love."
"Of course, Sansa,"
the Master responded kindly.
"The soul after death, like that bee, flies into a completely pure, different world, open, full of elevated impressions. It discovers other possibilities and a different vision. But the personality is preserved. And only when a person goes to a new incarnation does the end of the personality come. The personality that was formed in the previous life dies. And already in the new incarnation, in the new life, the person forgets everything. The whole personality falls away, and everything starts from scratch. That's why we can't say that death is the end. Here, it's necessary to understand in relation to what exactly the end comes, and on the contrary, in respect to what a new life begins. And sometimes, a person becomes enlightened, and then the end comes to this personality. Everything else comes to an end. After death, they merge with God. But to become enlightened and free from personality, one needs the experience of life on earth. One needs to go through many situations, acquire knowledge, continuously develop."
Sansa nodded to the venerable sage, gratefully accepting the knowledge she received, and folded her hands on her knees, awaiting the next question from another disciple. Armin continued the topic. "Her remarkable appearance attracted attention with the clarity of her bright gray eyes. Combined with the eastern, slightly narrowed eye shape and black, thick hair, it made her figure attractive."
"Master, does it mean that there is no end for Atman at all? Will it merge with God later, continue to exist forever, and become like God, equally eternal and unified forever?"
the end of the illusion of separation comes.
The master gently directed her.
That is, Atman had an illusion of separation. Atman thought that it was something autonomous, separate, complete. Atman thought it was a phenomenon, completely disconnected from the surrounding world, limited by something. But when this illusion is shattered, it becomes evident that Atman merges with everything around it because everything around is God.
Armin pressed her hand to her chest in a sign of heartfelt respect for the master and gracefully bowed her head. Straightening her back, with her stature and grace, she resembled an elegant black swan. Paulina asked the next question. She was eager to share with the master her thoughts on the recent dream. However, she formulated her question in such a way as to summarize her thoughts and be as concise as possible.
Great one. We recently watched the movie Life After Life. And last night, I dreamed of a scene from the movie in which I was the main character myself. And there, in the dream, I became frightened when I saw completely different people from a subtle level. I saw larvae and entities devouring them slowly. At that moment, I started looking for the master in the crowd and tried to concentrate to clearly imagine your image, to tune, and for you to be there with me. But in the original plot of the cartoon, the main character didn't remember the master right away. Is it true that if you don't think much about your guru during the day, don't establish a connection, then on a subtle level, you may not even remember that you were with the master in this life? It's so scary.
The sage smiled at Paulina and openly rejoiced at the remarkable opportunity that presented itself to her. To be in the place of the main character of such a significant work, even in the corridors of her own imagination, and moreover, to wake up from the dream with valuable knowledge. Then, returning to the question, he became serious again and spoke.
Yes, when you don't remember the master in the subtle level, that's the scariest thing. When a person remembers their guru, subtle energy immediately goes from the master to them. Spiritual assistance comes for the person to develop. If a person doesn't remember the master during the day in life, then this telepathic connection isn't established, and energy for development doesn't come. And to strengthen this connection, one must apply the knowledge of the master in life. Learn, help the school. It's necessary to practice often and connect with the master at such a mental, non-corporeal level to strengthen the connection.
Thank you, dear master. I understand you.
Paulina responded.
With your permission, I would like to ask another question. In the plot of the movie, Yan, the main character, commits suicide. Is suicide considered a sin? In our tradition, it is customary to consider a person who takes their own life as weak. They are condemned, as if they surrendered prematurely, as if they lost and didn't want to live. Even in the Orthodox Church, services cannot be held for such people, and they are not given a funeral. What is the correct position on this matter?
This is a very important question, Paulina, and we need to talk about it.
The sage responded willingly. He clasped his hands and began to explain.
No, there is no special sin in this, but it is a great folly committed by a person who does not wish to develop in this life. They are afraid of difficulties. At different times, different people had their own views on this matter. For example, some tribes had the practice of suicide among the elderly. When a person aged, began to fall ill, became a burden to others, they could decide to leave life voluntarily. And this was not condemned. It was considered normal. And somewhere, the elderly were taken away and thrown off a cliff when they became very old. There were other traditions. In each tradition, this question is solved, explained, whether it is good or bad in its own way. But these are traditions of that time. In any case, everything should be asked to the sages, how to live correctly now, how to apply the knowledge in various areas of life. If everyone listened to the master, then people's lives would be different. There would be no suicides. That's why it's necessary to spiritually develop, to comprehend the knowledge, to listen to the masters. Churches do indeed present suicide as a sin. But in reality, for example, if a person goes to work at a uranium plant, sharpens uranium rods, then they are also engaging in slow suicide, being irradiated, and then they die. They are warned about the danger, receive various briefings, and still agree to a slow death for the sake of money, some material goods, compensation, and benefits. They will die, and the next day, their family will be given some money for losing the breadwinner. And the question arises, was it worth it?
The master shrugged, sympathizing with such examples of human folly.
Or people go to work in some other harmful chemical production. This is also slow, voluntary death. Why don't priests rise up, say that you can't go to a uranium plant, to a chemical production? No one convinces these people to refrain from this slow suicide, doesn't guide them on the right path.
Probably because the church is now closely connected with the politics of the state,
one of the disciples remarked, supporting the master's words.
Someone has to earn money for the oligarchs to support production. That's why they need such cannon fodder. That's why they don't dissuade them.
By the way, about cannon fodder,
Armin joined the conversation again.
I recently heard how priests encouraged young people to go to the front lines to fight, gave them encouragement and blessings for certain death.
The sage nodded sadly, confirming the insidious ignorance of such clergy.
Exactly. A person goes to war as if to suicide. They are put in such conditions, kill yourself or you will be killed. And they understand that death is much closer in war than in ordinary life. Why do people voluntarily agree to this? No one condemns this. On the contrary, it is attributed with heroism and courage. Kill another person, become a criminal. But if you kill in war, you will be celebrated as a brave hero. People often go to certain death behind this perceived heroism. Suicide is condemned mostly with the idea that a person annihilates themselves, bringing no benefit to society. That is slow death in manufacture or pseudo-heroism on the front lines. They are always welcome. But when a person decides to leave the game in this way, it is considered a sin. It all depends on the label fixed to these situations. But essentially, it is nothing but suicide.
The master looked around with a deep, insightful gaze at the disciples, forming a collective energetic channel for the assimilation of important knowledge. His clear eyes shone empathy and compassion. When he spoke again, his deep velvety voice sounded instructive, but the loudest note in it was still love.
It is very important to understand why life is given to us. And when a person understands this, they will never think of voluntary death. The main mistake of suicide is that the soul does not have time to comprehend the truth. After all, the soul incarnates for experience, and suicide simply shortens the allotted time and does not allow this experience. It is necessary to strive for it, to be thirsty for it, to seek this experience everywhere and in everything. Effort must be made to develop, to toil. One must listen to the master, apply the knowledge, read wise books, turn to God. Then understanding will arise why life becomes difficult, why complex aspects arise. And then when this understanding comes, there will be the strength and energy to change one's life, to comprehend one's purpose, and realize it.
The eyes of the disciples shone with understanding and gratitude. Even such complex topics, the great master disclosed clearly and comprehensively. From a position of boundless love for life and for God, the listeners were in a state of complete acceptance and openness to the words they heard. Their faces reflected deep analysis and diligent inner work. Ava raised her hand. She was a mature woman in her early 50s, yet her outward appearance radiated the youth of the soul and health. Being a yoga instructor, Ava was flexible and sensual, and all her movements were light and smooth. She addressed the sage, endowing him with the radiance of an open heart.
Great one. As I was contemplating what you said, I once again realized the immense significance of meeting the Master in life. I am grateful to you for the knowledge, and thankful to God for the happiness of seeing you and receiving the teaching.
The sage sent a beam of warm, benevolent energy and a radiant smile to the disciple. He prepared to listen attentively to her question, and Ava continued.
I wanted to ask about fate. What is it, and why is it so often heard in society? Do you believe in fate? You see, I was born, and I very clearly feel that it is my fate to be near the Master. This feeling has been with me all my life and runs like a thread through the entire path I've walked. But if I were to express any negative emotions, I know for sure that this feeling would leave me, and I would leave, and I would be miserable. But this is also a certain path, and theoretically, I can turn it down. The same can be said about suicide. A person is given a certain fate, a certain destiny, and they end their life by suicide. Can we say that they deceived their fate, changed it? Or, for example, it is my fate that my parents may die when I turn 20. But I am here, and it does not happen because my karma is being worked out. So how do we understand, Master? Can fate be deceived? Should we believe in it and follow the predetermined? Or can we change it? And would that be right?
The sage thoughtfully stroked his beard. His gaze was filled with wisdom and harmony. He directed an energetic impulse to the disciples, revealing to them the great wisdom of life and urging them to tune in to the understanding of sacred meanings.
Fate means ordained by God. It is the path that God has destined for us. Naturally, the concept of fate exists in reality. But fate has its kind of forks, where a person can choose a direction. To understand that you are at a crossroads can be felt when you have the need to make a decision, when there is some difficult choice. A person is torn, doesn't know which way to go, what decision to make. If such a dilemma arises, if a person is tormented by a choice, here or there, to act like this or otherwise, that means they have come to a crossroads or at least realized that it exists. It is quite possible that earlier a person passed through crossroads, but did so unconsciously. These decisions came to them easily. They unconsciously chose one thing or another, paving a certain path. This indicates that the person was not yet ready for such awareness. They were not given to understand this. And then at some point, a person comes to a crossroads where they need to choose some fate option. After that, there may be no crossroads for a long time. They just live and go along some path. Then the crossroads begin again, more fate options. Again, choices have to be made. Therefore, there is fate, but fate has options. It is mandatory and absolutely for all people. There is fate, and there is a cosmogram. A certain order of planets at the moment of birth. All people come into the world unique. Someone is a cripple from the first breath. Someone is a sage. And someone as a fool. Depending on the fate outlined in the original version. Then a person grows up. The planets continue to act. And certain situations and crossroads arise. There is no escaping from this.
So, great one, fate can only be changed by making one choice or another, right?
Eva clarified.
In moments of choice,
confirmed the sage,
which path a person chooses to take. That's where one can change something, or a person can change something if they join a certain group of people. There are such strong groups. They are under some influence. And when a person enters this group, then they can live according to the cosmogram of this group. It can be a collective of happy, successful people. Then they have a better fate, a better cosmogram. If a person joins them, then their fate can improve. But if they fall into the environment of losers, fools, then their fate will become worse. Because they have bad aspects, a bad cosmogram of this group. In it, a person becomes worse. That is why we must look at which group we fall into, where we came, what kind of place it is, what energy it has. We need to tune in and try to intuitively understand whether this place will be worse for our fate, or it may be better for our fate. This can also be felt. Attention should be paid to all this, and carefully assess the situation around at the crossroads. Think about which side we choose, degradation or development. If a person consciously makes a choice, time after time, then their fate will improve all the time. And if the choices are unconscious, mechanical, then fate will deteriorate.
Understood. Thank you for the explanations, dear master.
Eva thoughtfully softened her gaze and recalled the recent crossroads that had arisen on her path. After pondering the sequence of choices made, the woman was satisfied with her decisions, ultimately leading her under the caring wing of the great sage. The master's gaze carefully studied the faces of the disciples when suddenly it met the direct questioning gaze of one of them. The young man's name was Ilias. He appeared to be around 40 with a slender build, thick black hair, and a dreamy gleam in his eyes. His fair skin was remarkably smooth, and a light blush on his cheeks gave him a youthful glow. Upon receiving permission, he addressed the master, speaking with an Eastern accent.
Wisest one, I want to ask you about the so-called exit from the game. After all, this metaphor applies only to one of the lives. Am I understanding correctly? That is, we understand that this is all God's game. And through suicide, a person sort of exits from earthly life, from this embodiment. But as you said in the previous darshan, God will still make this soul come to him. Not in this embodiment, then maybe in a dozen. That is, the soul will gradually evolve. From a bug and a cockroach, gradually becoming a butterfly, for example, then a more intelligent being, then finally an intelligent person who wants to develop. So anyway, God doesn't give us a way out because it's his game, he's its creator, and these are his rules. I want to say, am I right to understand that getting out of the game, in the global sense, is impossible because God will still make the Atman return to him?
Ilias's voice trembled slightly at the thought of personally addressing the sage. At the same time, he tried to express his deep respect for the master in tone and manner of speech, while fearing to appear too soft. This made his excitement even more apparent. The master, with his inherent sensitivity, noticed this. Seeing the embarrassment in the disciple's face, he responded to him with a confident, businesslike tone, neutralizing Ilias's awkwardness with his trusting, serious voice.
By and large, you are right, Ilias. It is impossible to get out of this. If a person commits suicide, it means one has come to a crossroads. That is, at the moment of suicide, fate options arise. To end life by suicide or to continue living and trying to develop further is a serious choice. A person comes to this intersection and struggles between yes and no. If, for example, they are sick and know for sure that they will die from the illness soon, or they are an old man, then in these cases, suicide will not particularly change fate. But if, for example, a person who knows the spiritual path, knows the master, somehow comes to such a crossroads and chooses his suicide, then this is very bad. In this case, a person with very great prospects makes the wrong choice. Thus, one simply misses a very big, happy opportunity.
As the keeper spoke, Ilias relaxed his shoulders with relief, feeling the confidence conveyed by the master. After carefully listening to the sage's answer, he turned to him again, much more openly.
Master, turning back to yesterday's darshan and pondering your answer, am I thinking correctly that here is where we need to play the million efforts card? The million efforts that need to be made? This is the key to this game, the tool that can help pass it, and it's the same missed opportunity that won't be there because of the suicide. You need to make a million efforts because you simply don't have an option to get out. Until you come to God, your consciousness will wander in these embodiments, in the labyrinths of this game. And when you start making a million efforts, you will immediately begin to approach the final, that is, the meeting with the Almighty and merging with it. Is that right, Master?
In the sage's gaze, Ilias read mutual respect and all-encompassing love. His eyes were smiling, although he spoke again with absolute firmness, continuing to support the disciple.
Yes, of course. That's why you need to make these million efforts as soon as possible and come to God. Otherwise, a new embodiment will come. If God doesn't see our efforts on this path, if he sees that we are not even looking for this path to him, or maybe don't even know about this path, if we don't understand his hints and suggestions, then God starts teaching us. He sends us difficulties, disappointments, and troubles to teach our mind. And as soon as a person withstands all these trials with dignity, endures all the lessons, copes with difficulties, they begin to become smarter, and bright thoughts appear in their head. A person thinks more often about God, begins to seek him. That's when, to embark on this path, a person makes the first effort out of that very million. And then they don't stop, make one effort after another, and God already sends them goodness and help. Life becomes much easier.
Folding his hands in a namaste gesture, Ilias bowed to the sage with gratitude, then, taking a step back, returned to his seat.
Master, is there a gradation of effort?
Tiona asked the next question.
For example, when the alarm clock rings every minute, and I observe my movements and my body, what impulses it gives, this is one effort. And for example, the effort you make during a difficult choice or a sharp angle, this is already completely different. It is more serious, more valuable. Can we say so? And if yes, then can one valuable, powerful effort as such be equal to 3-minute efforts when considered in total?
The disciples smiled kindly at Tiona's usual straightforwardness. In her questions to the master, sincerity and directness were often the common thread. She always called things by their names and was not afraid to appear too simple or strange. All the questions that interested her were always asked with ease, and the answers to them were interesting to every listener.
Of course,
the master spoke softly.
It is precisely in difficult situations that development occurs very intensively, at a fast pace. All the small efforts we make are just preparation for development. They proceed at a calmer pace, are easier to endure. A person can prepare, tune in a special way. When insignificant efforts are made, it's better to stay in the mood that it's all preparation. And when the sharp angle comes, all the strength and concentration will need to be directed there. Then at the moment of the sharp angle, the right attitude will already come, aimed at deep development. In these situations, one should do spiritual practices, return to oneself. In the moment of preparation, remember how one was tuned and how one awaited this sharp angle. This greatly helps in self-work and allows one to endure difficult times for oneself. To emerge from a complex situation with new consciousness, more developed, and if you don't make such small efforts or don't fix them for yourself, don't work through and tune in properly, then when a difficult moment comes, you will be lost. But if you repeatedly tune in to the fact that you are currently in the process of preparation, then in a difficult moment, you begin to use all the spiritual experience you have accumulated, do practices, and begin to enlighten.
Inspiration lit up on the faces of the disciples. The sparkle in their eyes and the joy of open hearts reflected the beneficial influence of Rajas, which filled the common aura. It was evident that the disciples were ready to embody the knowledge received in their lives right now. The effort made in perceiving the sacred truths from the Master's lips was a strong, reliable anchor for overcoming future possible difficulties in each person's life. Marika raised her hand smoothly. Usually a decisive and assertive girl by nature with an extravagant short haircut, today she looked completely different in the midst of gentle feminine disciples. As if infected by their subtle tantric energy, she herself became more fluid and gentle.
Master, may I ask you? I read in one book such wisdom that a person who has embarked on the path of spiritual development, which leads to the master, is halfway in the swamp. And the more their awareness, the more enlightened they become, the more they free themselves from this swamp. So, returning to your words, with each new incarnation, they come out of the swamp more and more. But I don't understand how a person can completely free themselves from this. If they have enlightened and already worked out their karma, then they don't need to incarnate anymore. So what happens to them? Do they become an angel?
Then they merge with God.
The keeper began to explain.
A fully spiritualized person becomes an angel. And an enlightened person is already a higher level. They dissolve into God.
The master fell silent, finishing his thought, but he saw misunderstanding in the eyes of the disciples. Several people even intended to raise their hands again to ask for clarification, but the sage himself sensed that they needed a more detailed answer. He gestured for the listeners to lower their hands and began to explain elaborately.
God created the illusion of separation. Externally, it seems to us that each of us is completely autonomous and not part of another person, part of the air, nature, part of something whole. People are convinced that everything in the world is separate, and first of all, we ourselves are separated from everything else. But going through the path of spirituality, this illusion fades, and the soul understands that, it turns out, it's all God, and everything that exists is me. That's enlightenment. And as long as there is an illusion of separation, even an angel feels separate from another angel, from other people, from God. Of course, for an angel, this illusion is much less pronounced, but he still cannot completely free himself from it.
So if a person is the most entrenched egoist, does that mean he has the biggest illusion of separation?
Marika clarified, widening her eyes.
Exactly,
nodded the sage.
That's why the stronger the illusion of separation is in a person, the harder it is for him to live, the more negative emotions boil within him, more bad thoughts arise, difficult situations occur in this case. And when he has already transformed into an angel, then the soul no longer feels its imaginary separation as strongly. It already knows for sure that it is part of a larger whole, feels connected to all people and the whole world. Then it becomes much easier for a person to live. They no longer need to worry about themselves. Therefore, they begin to merge with this world. That is, we must strive to destroy egoism and merge with the whole world, with people, with God, as fully as possible.
Eva decided to ask a question again. With the master's permission, the woman clarified.
Master, do I understand correctly that among angels there are also incarnations?
An angel watches over living people.
The keeper of knowledge spoke softly.
God attaches a guardian angel to each person, and it watches over the person, tries to help them somehow. Suppose a person is suffering, or pain arises. An angel can take on a part of that pain or suffering, make it so that the person suffers as little as possible. It constantly protects them, constantly gives them some bright thoughts. Angels also have a lot of work to do. They don't sit idle, but try to help those who remain on earth, those who are in a desperate situation from the perspective of a better life. After all, it's much easier for an angel in the subtle level. If a person dies, their angels immediately meet them, help them, guide them to a better place, explain to them where they have ended up, etc. So angels have a lot of tasks. They provide a lot of help to other people. They don't just sit and enjoy bliss. They also participate in life and try to help as many people as possible. This is their mission.
Great one. What about you then?
Paulina asked, embarrassedly lowering her gaze to the floor.
You said that an enlightened person merges with God, but you are enlightened. Does this mean that you won't reincarnate here on Earth anymore? I ask because suddenly I had the disturbing thought that in that case, this is our last life in which we have the opportunity to learn from you.
Other disciples, upon hearing Paulina's question, also trembled excitedly. The precious moments the disciples spent in conversation and practice with the Keeper already seemed like the most precious treasure that they wanted to keep in memory forever. But now, realizing the finiteness of this happiness, the disciples, perplexed, exchanged glances as if they didn't understand how they could live without him in all subsequent lives. Tears welled up in the eyes of several disciples. The Keeper looked kindly at the disciples, full of love and empathy. He was a part of each of them, touching their open hearts, bringing them the light of insight and divine grace. When he spoke, his voice sounded softer and more sensual than ever before.
I will explain to you, my curious disciples. Enlightened beings sometimes reincarnate when it is necessary to help humanity rise to a new level. It's very rare that such souls reincarnate again. Sometimes enlightened beings take the bodhisattva vow, which means that as long as all people have not reached the state of Buddha, they will continue to reincarnate, continue to help them. These are the options, or they simply dissolve into God and become the entire world at once.
The listeners quieted down, enjoying the vibrations emanating from the voice of the Great Keeper. Many of them heard in the sage's answer hope that in subsequent reincarnations, the irresistible desire to meet the Guru would still lead them to him.
Can I ask more about angels?
Eva clarified, cunningly diverting the disciples from the sad topic.
Many of us have often heard about Lucifer, right?
Eva appealed to the others for support, and they nodded, encouraging her to continue her question.
Because Lucifer is a fallen angel, so it turns out that this soul has not yet fully developed if he fell. And also, the fact of his such reverse transformation raises questions. It turns out that degradation is also possible at a subtle level, right? Is it also due to egoism?
It was evident that the listeners had once again engaged in the flow of active assimilation of knowledge. They looked inquiringly at the master, awaiting the solution to such an interesting question.
It is necessary here to consider in detail who we call a fallen angel.
The master rightfully noted.
As we know, Atman is a particle of God. When it descends to Earth, it turns out to be a fallen angel. We are all fallen angels because we all descended to Earth, completely forgot about God, forgot everything that was there in the subtle level, and became overgrown with egoism. Sometimes spirits, stronger, more powerful, also descend to the physical, to the etheric level. And they also become such fallen angels who forgot their divinity and can even do dark deeds here. But all fallen angels sooner or later begin to remember who they were, who they are now, and how it happened, and gradually rise back to God.
The words of the sage stirred up the disciples and spawned many related questions. The master nodded towards an energetic young man with curly red hair. His name was Adam. The green eyes of the disciple sparkled with keen interest, silently pleading for permission to speak.
Great one,
Adam began energetically.
Perhaps what I'm about to say will sound naive, but such a thought comes to mind. If we are all fallen angels and descended here from a better world, from the subtle level, then can it be said that here on Earth is hell? And we all living in it are dark entities? Demons?
The Master was slightly surprised and smiled as he listened to Adam's question.
Because in fact, out of their selfish considerations, people often commit evil. How many murderers and criminals among people, fraudsters, thieves? How much evil happens on Earth every day? Not to mention how we pollute nature. There is little good that people do for the world, overall. Only if they have embarked on the path of spiritual growth, if they have met the masters, then they can still be called human. But before that, all of us are nothing but spawn of hell.
Yes, we are the spawn of hell,
the master said, smiling menacingly, and ominously moved his fingers. Everyone laughed. Adam's words sounded quite funny, but everyone understood that there was indeed a significant portion of truth in them. All waited to hear what the Keeper would say.
Indeed, Adam. Often people torment each other, experience negative emotions, to the point of killing each other in war. This gives us the right to say that there is indeed a real hell on Earth. And many behave like demons, committing mischief, living like animals. But a small part of people have come to their senses, fortunately. They have already begun to remember why they live, to think about the meaning of life, and to become angels here.
It's good that there is a master and our school,
solemnly declared a disciple.
With our activities, we will raise so many angels on Earth that our fraternity will finally outweigh this demonic majority.
The master smiled at such a brave mood, and the other disciples clapped, supporting this positive slogan. This joyful note was a kind harbinger of the end of the conversation. The master glanced at the clock and allowed a short series of final questions. The graceful, dark-haired beauty, Armin, raised her hand.
Master, can I ask more about Atmans? There is a state called non-existence. In one complex, this definition is described as a special state in which the entire universe turns into one point. Am I correct in understanding that this is when all Atmans have died in the illusion that they are separate and all have merged with God simultaneously?
The question left for last turned out to be complex. And the master took a short pause, formulating the answer in the most accessible way.
When we say that the universe turns into one point, we mean that the physical world is destroyed, but the subtle worlds remain. So it's not complete annihilation. Angels, archangels, higher worlds, and higher beings remain. They cannot be destroyed as the physical world, and the physical world is destroyed. People rejoice. Hell no longer exists. We enjoy rest until a new hell is created. Some explosion will occur, from which the universe will appear again. The physical world will be formed again, and again we will incarnate into the physical world and suffer.
So, the universe created by the Big Bang is only the creation of the physical level? So the universe itself is completely different, multi-layered? But if it's created by an explosion, and an explosion is something destructive, and the whole world is chaos, then how can we even think that it's something good? Essentially, this is hell. As Adam said, we live in an explosion. So the universe expands and collapses, and we live inside the explosion. So this is hell. All of this is evil.
Armin looked at the master with wide-open eyes, as if some important, fundamental truth had just solidified in her mind. Other disciples also looked puzzled. They tried to fit this complex idea into their thoughts.
But the explosion is controlled.
The master directed the disciples in the right direction of thought and continued to explain.
For example, if in fast-forward mode, we play a video of a seed sprouting, how it gradually turns into a tree. At some point, we would also see something like an explosion. But the seed has a clear program of how things should be, how things should develop. So in this case, the explosion would be completely controlled. Not just chaos, where everything exploded, scattered, but a clear plan where gradually some details, elements in this explosion appear sequentially. The plan is created, and the explosion is controlled. It creates something.
Seeing the misunderstanding in the disciples' eyes, the sage lovingly and patiently continued to explain the complex topic.
The thing is, matter is very dense,
he affirmed.
Very dense matter is created, and the soul is forced to live in it. The soul is a subtle matter, but it has to exist in such a dense, uncomfortable spacesuit. And because of this, it's difficult. And not just in a spacesuit, but it forgets everything, loses connection with God because of this spacesuit. Abilities that the soul had, telepathy, for example, they are destroyed. The soul flew everywhere across all worlds, and here it even has to learn to walk again. And so it is in all spheres. So because of this rough matter, it has to live. For the soul, it is very difficult and stuffy. It's tight, like in a grave. That's why it's very good that no one remembers how it was before this, how the soul lived freely. Otherwise, in such a cardinal comparison, it would be simply impossible to endure the difference in living conditions. And gradually, a person must understand what disastrous position one is in. It's not just a spacesuit, it's a simulator. You have to train. You still have to cultivate mindfulness, elevated emotions, try to break out of this spacesuit, out of this limitation that has arisen. And it's through these efforts that the soul begins to develop.
So, essentially, we need to change our thinking?
Another disciple, Marika, asked.
To understand that my home is heaven, the subtle level. Actually, I'm from there, and I need to return there. And here, meanwhile, I'll have to train. God has given me the opportunity to develop qualities, to grow. And such thinking should be that the main goal is to return there, from where I came. And for this, I have been given this life. To return there through this trial. My home is the subtle level, and I am from the subtle level. And in this case, if you think like this, it becomes much easier for us to look at this physical world and to dissociate. Then it becomes not so significant. Am I correct in thinking so?
Yes, of course.
The master beamed.
If we remember that in this life and in this world, we are like guests and only temporarily, it will be very good. Here is a gym. We train and then go back to the subtle level.
The keeper of knowledge endowed the disciples with his enlightened energy, helping them to realize many mysteries of the world order and opening the gates of ancient sacred wisdom before them. Following the guru, the disciples exited the gazebo. He led them along one of the paths, marked by a tall totem with an image of an otter. The path led to the place of spiritual practice near the spring, gushing from the depths of the earth. The hours turned into moments, and every heart in this sacred glade ignited with the light of understanding. And although the meeting place was just a part of nature, it became that magical space where it became clear. In every person, regardless of their past or nationality, lives that very fire of spiritual seeking that unites every soul in an invisible web of love and realization of divine unity. Main theses. 1. Death is only the end for the physical body. Although the physical body dies, the personality continues to exist after death in new incarnations. However, when transitioning to a new incarnation, the personality formed in the previous life dies, and the person starts a new life with a clean slate. 2. God created the illusion of separation. A spiritually developed person becomes an angel. An enlightened person merges with God. The difference is that angels still have the illusion of separation, while the enlightened have fully realized that they are one with God. 3. An enlightened soul forever merges with God. However, the enlightened can take the Bodhisattva vow and incarnate again to complete the mission of enlightening all people. 4. It is necessary to establish a connection with the Master as often as possible and strengthen it. For continuous reception of benevolent subtle energy from the Master, it is necessary to regularly repeat and apply the knowledge, think about the Master, and help the school. 5. Suicide is not a sin. It's foolishness. Such an exit from the game only increases the time of suffering on earth in new incarnations and prevents enlightenment. 6. Destiny is predetermined for each person. This is a specific scenario provided by God. At the same time, there are forks, situations in every destiny. 7. God assigns a guardian angel to each person. His tasks include assistance in difficult life situations, spiritual care, and hints from the subtle level. 8. Any Atman that is separated from God and descended to earth can be called a fallen angel. Thus, all people living on earth and forgetting their belonging with the divine are fallen angels. 9. To make it easier to live this life and reject the illusion of separation, one should know that the true home of the soul is the subtle level, and the task of a person is to use earthly life as a gym to overcome trials and spiritual development in order to return as soon as possible to the boundless divine space.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.